Tonight, dangerous descent, panic on an airplane after a passenger pries open an emergency exit. Mid-air mayhem in South Korea.
All of a sudden, you've got a massive air rushing through the aircraft.
A terrifying ordeal and an arrest. A grieving British family and a Canadian suspect.
It's like going to his funeral all over again.
Seeking justice over the online sale of a substance used in suicides. Plus, Celine Dion calls off her world tour.
The stage, that's her life. She lives to sing.
A superstar sidelined by an ongoing struggle with an incurable condition.
In my dreams.
CTV National News with Omar Sachedina. Reporting tonight, John Venavalli Rao.
Good evening. Nearly 200 passengers are thrilled to be back on the ground tonight after a scare in the skies when a man pulled open a door on a plane while it was in flight. It happened over South Korea. Some passengers were taken to hospital and one is now in police custody. CTV's Adrian Gobriel starts us off.
A scene of sheer terror from over 200 meters in the sky. Passengers desperately grip their seats as they brace for what might come next as wind roars through the cabin. Multiple video angles give a window into the fear on board an Asiana Airlines Airbus in South Korea. The flight was making its descent into Daegu International Airport when officials say a man in his 30s opened the plane's door. This passenger saying he suddenly tried to get off as the crew yelled for help. 194 people were on board. A group jumped into action to pull the man back, but not before he'd managed to swing the door wide open. The ensuing sky-high chaos resulted in some fainting and struggling to breathe. We flew with that open for 3 to 5 minutes and then landed, says this woman. The children were so shocked. The plane touched down with the door still wide open, amazingly with all the passengers still on board and alive.
The aircraft was on final approach, on the last stages of its approach to the runway, 700 feet off the ground. And so at that point in time, everybody, including the flight attendants, will be buckled in.
Aviation experts note that it's next to impossible for a passenger to open the door of an airplane from a higher altitude because of the pressure, though freak incidents have taken place.
They said there was a hole and someone went out.
April 2018, debris from a blown-out engine shatters a window on a Southwest flight traveling at cruising altitude. A passenger is partially sucked out the window and dies. Today's incident saw at least 9 passengers taken to hospital. The man accused of opening the hatch was taken into police custody with charges pending.
Approaching 1.
This simulator tells us the plane was traveling at about 240 kilometers an hour as it made its descent when the door suddenly opened. That's the alarm the pilots would have heard, and in the cabin, the wind gusts would have been so strong, some would have been knocked off their feet. Aviation experts say the safest place in that moment is to remain seated and buckled in as the crew tries to safely land the flight. John?
All right, a travel nightmare for those passengers. Adrian, thanks. To Ukraine and more terror raining down from the skies after a Russian missile hit a medical clinic, killing 2 people and injuring 30 more, including children. Fire crews raced to put out the flames in an attack Zelensky called a pure atrocity. 3 others are still missing. A major announcement today from Canadian superstar Celine Dion. The singer is canceling the rest of her world tour, citing ongoing health problems. She has been battling a rare neurological disorder. CTV's Quebec Bureau Chief Geneviève Beauchemin has the reaction.
Love comes to those who believe it.
A movie role, new music released, gave fans hope Celine Dion would make her grand return to the stage. But the one-in-a-million singer, afflicted with a syndrome affecting 1 in a million people, pulled the plug on her Courage World Tour, canceling all 42 shows and sparking concerns she may never tour again. "I'm so sorry to disappoint all of you once again," she wrote to her fans. "I'm working really hard to build back my strength, but touring can be very difficult even when you're 100%.
I always give 100% when I do my shows. but my condition is not allowing me to give you that right now.
This comes less than 6 months after she revealed she was diagnosed with stiff person syndrome, a rare neurological disorder. Luciano Costantino is a devoted fan. He's seen Dion 17 times in concert and had a ticket to a now-canceled Paris date.
I'm sure she's coming back. I mean, we don't want to think of the worst. Imagine if it was our family member, a friend, a dear person. We always want to hope for the best.
The stage, that's her life.
Music analyst Mike Gauthier has interviewed Dion dozens of times since the 1980s. Since she recorded that song written by her mom.
If there are some shows, it's going to be like some in Vegas and at least one in Montreal to say thank you very much for this wonderful career.
There's no known cure for stiff person syndrome.
For a lot of people, it's a devastating condition. There are treatments available.
And doctors say the spotlight Dion put on the syndrome may one day lead to more efficient treatments.
The hope is that this will help foster more research.
Dion says she's not giving up, but the Courage World Tour launched in 2019 had already been paused twice before by her health concerns and by the pandemic before this cancellation. John.
Thanks, Genevieve. In Montreal, where firefighters are still trying to extinguish a major fire that started Thursday afternoon at a heritage building.
Fortunately, nobody's been hurt. Everybody got out safely.
Firefighters did discover a man in his 80s who was still in his apartment hours after the fire started. He was taken to a hospital. The nearly 200-year-old site included senior housing, daycare, and offices for Heritage Montreal. It's still unclear how the fire started. A British coroner is sounding the alarm tonight over a lethal substance that a Canadian man allegedly sold to vulnerable people in the United Kingdom. As CTV's Heather Wright reports, the suspect is linked to a growing number of deaths by suicide in a widening international investigation.
There are still few answers for the parents of Tom Parfitt, nearly 2 years after he died. The 22-year-old student in the UK took his own life, poisoning himself with a substance he bought online.
It's like going to his funeral all over again.
Julia Gilmore was at Coroner's Court in Surrey, England today for a hearing into the death of her son, whose suicide has been linked to Ontario man Kenneth Law. Law is accused of using multiple websites to sell sodium nitrite to at-risk individuals. The substance is legal but deadly in certain amounts. He's been charged by police in Ontario with two counts of assisting suicide.
We have to stop the supply of these substances.
After his son's death, Tom's father, David, wanted to see how easy it was to buy this poison online. Without knowing, he purchased sodium nitrite from the same website his son had months earlier.
Even a year after Tom's death, there were still people taking the substance supplied by Kenneth Law. It couldn't have been more obvious that he was killing tens and maybe hundreds of people, and yet there was no action from law enforcement.
It was an investigation by the Times of London that finally caught the attention of authorities on both sides of the Atlantic.
There were definitely missed opportunities.
When journalist James Beale first spoke to Law over the phone, he says the former chef was candid.
I thought he might be a bit cagey, a bit secretive, but he was pretty open that people take this stuff and die.
Beale says that tone changed when he confronted Law in person outside a Mississauga post office.
He said, look, I'm simply selling a product and it's up to people what they want to do with this poison.
Police in Canada, the US, the UK and now New Zealand all confirm they are looking into whether any deaths are connected to Kenneth Law. He remains in custody but will be back in court on Tuesday for a bail hearing. John.
All right, we'll be keeping an eye on that. Thank you, Heather. Some tragic news out of Nepal tonight involving a Canadian mountain climber who died while pursuing his dream of making it to the top of Everest. Here's CTV's Melanie Nagy.
People have long been enamored with Mount Everest. Its mystique lures climbers from around the world, including Dr. Peter Swart. It was the Vancouver anesthesiologist's lifelong aspiration to reach the summit, but that dream has now tragically ended.
He worked hard for the last several years to put himself in the position to train and to have the technical mountain climbing capability to do this.
Swart died yesterday on the mountain while descending from an area called the South Col. It's the final camp used by climbers before they make their summit push.
Peter wanted this more than we all necessarily understood, and he was very keen on making this happen and was at peace with the risk that was involved.
The 63-year-old is said to have experienced respiratory problems before his death. Even for those in impeccable shape, climbing at such a high altitude is extremely risky.
Cardiovascular system, the muscles, the brain doesn't get enough oxygen, so you get confused. You get incredibly just tired beyond anything, a level of fatigue that is debilitating.
Swart is one of at least 12 people to die on Everest so far this year. The latest climbing season is being called one of the deadliest in recent history. Last week, Jason Kennison from Australia died on his return from the summit. The last time there were more than 10 fatalities during one season was back in 2019. That's when there was a massive line of climbers, all pushing to reach the peak. That congestion created lethal conditions. As for Swart, sadly, he never reached his goal of conquering Everest. Melanie Nagy, CTV News, Vancouver.
In Alberta, there are just a few days left for politicians to make their case to the voters, with polls predicting a tight race as Monday's provincial election fast approaches. CTV's Alberta Bureau Chief Bill Fortier now on the critical messages being delivered as the final weekend of campaigning gets underway.
In key battleground Calgary, Alberta's United Conservative Party and New Democratic Party are using every last minute selling their platforms to undecided voters.
So we are focused on governing for all of Alberta. The division is not healthy.
It's about everyday Albertans, their families, their livelihoods, and their safety.
In what's predicted to be an extremely close finish, the 11th hour campaigning is vital for both parties, according to this political analyst.
Getting your voters, your supporters, or those who are persuadable out to vote for you could make the difference in a number of these ridings.
With a tight race comes amped up mudslinging.
People fled the province by the tens of thousands.
Enough is enough.
The UCP slamming the NDP for the province's economic downturn during its last term in government and its plan to raise the tax on big business from 8% to 11%.
Alberta cannot afford to go back.
The NDP's Rachel Notley critical of Danielle Smith's past suggestions that Albertans could pay to see a doctor and for comparing vaccinated Albertans to Nazi followers before getting back into politics.
I think people need to judge Danielle Smith by what she's done and by what she said.
It comes down to a campaign of fear.
According to this political commentator, those scare tactics can work, but they can also backfire.
I'm kind of worried that it's actually going to end up in a paralysis where they're really scared of choosing wrong, so they end up not voting.
Advanced polls haven't reflected that so far, with more than 500,000 ballots already cast, and the election is still 3 days away. John.
All right, thank you, Bill. And our chief anchor, Omar Sachedina, will be broadcasting from Alberta starting on Sunday, and we will have extensive coverage of Monday's election. To the U.S. now, where two more members of the extremist group, the Oath Keepers, have been sentenced for their roles in the January 6th attack, both offering their apologies today in court. Here's CTV's Washington Bureau Chief, Joy Malvin.
Jessica Watkins, a former Army veteran from Ohio who helped storm the Capitol, is seen marching with the Oath Keepers, wearing helmets and tactical gear in military-style formation on January 6th. She can be heard that day.
We have a good group. We got about 30, 40 of us. We're sticking together and sticking to the plan.
Today, pleading for leniency, calling herself just another idiot at the Capitol, she tearfully apologized. My actions and my behaviors that fateful day were wrong and, as I now understand, criminal. Judge Amit Mehta punished her with more than 8 years behind bars for recruiting and training others to fight. Kenneth Harrelson, who said he took a security job with the Oath Keepers, also broke down, sentenced to 4 years for his actions. A much different tone than from the Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes. Showing no remorse yesterday, Rhodes was ready to wage war, say prosecutors, to keep Donald Trump in power, and in his own words, predicted violence.
We have men already stationed outside D.C. as a nuclear option in case they attempt to remove the president illegally. We will step in and stop it.
Defiantly calling himself a political prisoner, the judge wasn't buying it, describing his actions as terrorism. Slapping Rhodes with the stiffest sentence yet, 18 years in prison for seditious conspiracy. His ex-wife fears it may not be long enough.
I guarantee he already has plans in the works for as soon as he's out. He will regroup and he will do this again.
So far, 500 people have been convicted over the Capitol attack. Should Trump become president again, or his Republican rival Ron DeSantis, both said they'd strongly consider pardoning the rioters. John?
All right, Joy, thank you. Well, coming up after the break.
This is a plan that is going to cost lives.
A big push to save a small town emergency department. Plus, a secret collection of rare classic cars revealed. Across the country, many hospitals have had to reduce their emergency department hours or even temporarily close them because of staffing shortages. But northeast of Toronto, where one ER is slated to be closed for good, residents are fighting back. Here's CTV's Heather Butts.
These yellow signs dot the rural highways of cottage country in central Ontario. A plea to reverse the decision to close the Minden Emergency Department permanently on June 1st.
This is a plan that is going to cost lives.
Patrick Perzuchek is spearheading the campaign to save a critical service that saved his life and countless others. More than 24,000 have signed a petition, including people outside the region. The hospital is citing staffing shortages as its main reason.
We were facing multiple frequent closures over the coming months if we didn't do something. And despite all of our efforts, we haven't been able to recruit as many people as we need.
As staffing strains ripple across the country, temporary ER closures have become routine practice in dozens of rural communities shuttered for hours or days at a time.
We just can't be doing this on an ad hoc basis. Nationally, this is a national problem with common root causes that needs a national discussion.
The Minden ER has never implemented a temporary closure and is the only emergency department in the country to close permanently in the last year. Nova Scotia transitioned some of its rural ERs to urgent treatment centers with reduced hours, a model this ER physician says Minden should consider.
Because there are going to be other communities facing this very same situation in the coming years.
The hospital says consolidating with its Halliburton site more than 20 minutes away would provide stable services, though doctors have said the Minden ER had coverage for the summer.
This came as a complete shock to the community. The doctors and the nurses were told 15 minutes before the announcement to the public.
His group is now looking to take their battle to court.
We're not part of a morbidity and mortality rate. We're human lives. This has to stop.
Ontario's Ministry of Health says it's not involved in these kind of decisions as hospitals are independent corporations. Still, there are calls for more government oversight. Heather Butts, CTV News, Toronto.
Some dramatic video out of Spain tonight where torrential rains have caused extensive flooding. This car tried to cross the waters but ended up getting swept away. No word on the driver's condition. A fierce storm came after a lengthy drought in the region, one of the driest springs on record. Still ahead, a heartwarming match made on the ice. The hockey champs about to become more than just teammates. That's after the break. Another one of Elon Musk's tech ventures is in the news after his brain implant company Neuralink said U.S. regulators have given the okay to start testing the device on humans. Musk envisions chips being implanted in the skull, allowing a person's brain to directly communicate with a computer or a smartphone. It's believed the technology could help those with paralysis or blindness and even allow someone to surf the web with their thoughts. An 11-year-old from Windsor, Ontario, says he never thought he'd be a spelling bee champion, but now he's one of three Canadians going to the big leagues.
My parents showed me an email, like, they were like, hey, it looks like there's a spelling bee at your school. Do you want to join? I was like, I'll probably lose, but sure.
But Isaac Brogan is on a winning streak and will compete next week in Washington at the Scripps National Spelling Bee.
Conundrum. C-O-N-U-N-D-R-U-M.
Conundrum. Correct. And congratulations.
Grade 7 student Eleanor Jevons from Waterloo is also heading to D.C. and says her friends and family are excited.
They think that I'm some famous celebrity and that I'm going to, like, give them all autographs. They think I'm going to win.
They'll be joined by 13-year-old Chuchia Wong from Halifax, who won the Nova Scotia Spelling Bee. And a pair of stars on Canada's women's hockey team had some big news today, announcing they're engaged. In an Instagram post, team captain Marie-Philippe Poulin said, "So this happened. Best question I ever asked." She said, "We." Poulin was referring to Laura Stacey. The couple were part of Canada's gold medal winning team at the Beijing Olympics in 2022. They also captured silver together at this year's World Championship. After the break, why a mystery man's secret stash of vintage vehicles has car lovers revved up. So many these days make so much of their lives public, making all the more remarkable the longtime secret kept by a Dutch car enthusiast. Here's CTV's chief international correspondent, Paul Workman.
You don't have to be a car lover to appreciate the passion and secrecy that went into this collection. Put together over four decades, carefully and tenderly hidden away in warehouses and a disused church, until old age and dementia meant giving it up. This is a collection made with heart and soul, and that's what makes it so special, says the dealer now selling it off. Assembled by a wealthy Dutch car salesman by the name of Ad Palman, who had an eye for the exceptional and a mania for the rare, and left most of his discoveries untouched. Look, he says, it still has the original leather, and it's in perfect shape. Maseratis and Jaguars, old Ferraris and Aston Martins, a treasure snuggled away and never talked about. It's like they're still in the first years of their lives, he says, like they went into a coma and have been sleeping.
It's just crazy. It's just a total mix of something. Why you collect all those, I just don't know.
A 1955 Lancia Aurelia Spider that only a millionaire can afford. Part of one man's prized obsession, to be dusted off and sold to the highest bidder. Paul Workman, CTV News, London.
A treasure trove expected to fetch millions. That's it for us tonight. For Omar Sachedina and all the rest of us at CTV National News, thank you for watching. Have a good night and a great weekend.